Every one of us love to be around either someone or read something or be somewhere that when we're done, we feel better about ourselves or what we're doing. Let me ask you a question. Do you remember the first time in your life that you were motivated? I mean, go back. Go back a while. Now, I know I was motivated before this, but I'm going to go back, if you'll let me for a moment, and share with you the first experience that I can remember being motivated. I'm sure there were others before then, but this one was the one that really helps me to understand the power of motivation. It's when I was in the fourth grade, and I went to my first high school basketball game. I'd never been to a basketball game before. And, you know, the band was playing and they were doing all the warm-ups. But what motivated me that evening is all of a sudden, right before the start of the game, they turned all the lights off. And then they put a spotlight down on the starting five. And with a drum in the background, they would announce the players. And the players would run out on the middle of the floor with the whole gymnasium dark, except the spotlight on that player. And the people would stand up and they would cheer. I can remember I was in the balcony. I was hanging over the railing, only as a fourth grade kid would do. I'm hanging over the railing, and I'm watching these ball players run out on the basketball court, and I'm watching everybody cheer and everybody get excited about the game and about the ball players. And that evening, I can still remember how I felt. I said to myself, I'm going to learn how to play basketball. And someday, I'm going to be in this gymnasium, and they're going to call my name, and I'm going to run out on the middle of the court. And I went home that night and I told my dad, I said, Dad, I'm going to learn how to play basketball. And my dad, we had a little driveway there and he put up the basketball court and got me a Spalding basketball and the whole story. And I'm telling you, I'd shovel snow and I'd be out there playing when it was snowing. I mean, from that point on, I just began to play basketball and practice and work on my game. And I can remember when I got to the sixth grade, you know, you have this little fifth grade ball and sixth grade ball. I played on Franklin School's sixth grade basketball game. And we, in the city, we were one of the two best teams. And the championship for the sixth grade basketball team in Circleville, Ohio, was to go to the Mill Street Gym and play basketball on the court where I'd seen the big boys run out for the starting lineup. And I'll never forget what I did. When we got there, all the other kids got to practicing, and I remember taking my basketball and going over and sitting there in the seat where those guys sat. And I closed my eyes. I mean, I turned all the lights of the gym off. And then I announced my name, and I dribbled the ball out to the center court. And it felt so good. Nobody else was paying attention. Nobody else knew what I was doing. It felt so good, I did it again. And about the third time, the coach came over and said, John, come on, get over here and start practicing. We're getting our warm-ups here. He said, what are you doing? And I remember looking at him just as clear as I could be. I said, I'm getting ready to play high school basketball. And we played that game, and I'll never forget, as a sophomore in high school, when I looked on the locker room right before the game and I saw the starting lineup, and I was the youngest kid on the team, and I saw my name at left guard. And all of a sudden, I realized, now, a few years later, my dream was going to come true. I'll never forget the lights going out, the spotlight coming on, me running out. The first thought I had right before I ran out is, don't trip. But it's a beautiful story. It's just my story. It's a simple story. It's not brilliant, but it's just a story. It's a story of the power of motivation, of what happens to a person when all of a sudden they're motivated to do something that they've never done before. And as I look in my own life, there are all kind of what I call motivational channels in my life. And I'm not going to spend much time here because you understand this very well in this room. But as I look back at all the channels of motivation for me, number one is books. Man, I've read books that have changed my life. I've read books that have truly become my best friends. I just gave a book to a friend of mine called Bill Clausen called No Rival Love. It's a book that I read in 1970. Changed my life. And I've held on to it. And I gave it to him and I said, if you want to know what a 23-year-old kid thinks, read this book. And I handed it to him. And because what I'd done is as I read the book, I underlined things, I put things in the side margins, thoughts that I was having, and it just kind of marks my journey in life. The day that I read Oswald Sanders' book on spiritual leadership, it absolutely changed my life. I mean, it never ends. Books that I have read that have just marked my life and have become what I would call motivational channels for me. The same is true today. There are still books along the pathway. Now, what I have done is, because anymore I mark books and I file everything, I don't keep books. I give them away. So I've probably given 5,000 books away in the last 4 or 5 years. But I keep one section of books. They're the books that mark my life. I keep them. And I look back at them, and I find it to be a tremendous journey. I take my old Bibles. Every 3 years, I work through a Bible. And when I say I work through it, by that time, I've pretty well worked through it and read it and done some stuff. And I keep them in a certain section. And a lot of times, I'll just spend maybe a couple of hours and pull off one of them. And I'll just go back and I'll think, this is what I was reading back then. This is how it affected me. This is what I thought. And I find it still motivates me. But that's one channel, books. That's why I write books. I write books to help motivate people and give them personal growth. The second motivational channel I have in my life is what I call places. Places that I've been that have really had an effect upon my life. I remember the first time, this won't do anything for you because you're not me and I'm not you. But I remember the first time I went to Epworth, England. Now, Epworth, England was the place where John Wesley was born. And it was the place where he preached on his dad's tombstone. And the only reason he could preach there is because you had to own the property you preached in England at that time. And the only property he owned was his father's tombstone. So 10,000 people heard him speak from his father's tombstone. And right around the corner, I found a picture of him doing that. That was an 1825 picture that I got. And I got it framed in my house. There was the old Red Lion Inn. It's a tavern, really, right on the circle of Epworth. Epworth's just a little town. And that's where John Wesley stayed when he came back to visit in Epworth. And I remember wanting to stay. It's all run down. It's terrible. Margaret looked at me and said, John, if you stay out, you're going to stay by yourself tonight, buddy. It's just not really a place to stay, I can promise you. But man, I thought, I got to stay where John Wesley stayed. Now it was a place. But have you ever been to a place that motivated you? Okay, it's a motivational channel in your life. A third area is people. Aren't there just some people that just motivate you and you want to be around them because when you're around them, you feel better about yourself and about life? I mean, that's just part of the process. Now, what I do, because I'm highly visual, is I keep pictures of people that motivate me. If you sat at my desk in my office, you would see the people in my life that greatly motivate me. And for different reasons. I got a picture of me and Billy Graham at his 40th anniversary. And we're walking down the hall, just the two of us. And in fact, he just finished with the reporters, and he grabbed me and said, let's go down here for a moment. And the two of us walked down this hall, and we're going to duck in a side room. And we spent 15 minutes together while 3,000 people were waiting. But I remember as we walked down that hall, the reason I got the picture of Billy Graham in my room with me is because every time I see him, I'm motivated to be a faithful servant of God. It's a motivational picture for me. I got a picture of Bill Bright, Bill and Vonette. I did their graduation, I don't know, several years ago out in Arrowhead Springs. And I got a picture of them. And every time I see Bill Bright's picture, it reminds me of vision. I know nobody that has as much vision as Bill Bright. He's the greatest visionary I've ever met in my life. And I got a picture of Coach Mack and me at University of Colorado at a stadium before Promise Keeper. And it's Coach Mack and me. And the reason I've got that picture is he's a picture of a football coach that God has used greatly. And you know what? Every time I see that picture, it motivates me because if God could use Coach Mack, he can use anyone. Now, these are motivational channels for me. If I got a picture of my equip board that helped me with the mission that I think is the most important mission for me to accomplish in life, and I look at those players on my team, and Jim Dornan is one of them, and I look at that, and it reminds me of teamwork. It motivates me of the power of teamwork. Well, I could go on and on. I don't need to go on. Here's the point. A motivational channel in my life is people. Fourthly, a motivational channel in my life is tapes. And I know for everyone of you in this room, that's true. That's why I continually listen to tapes. Yesterday, I listened to two of them in my car while I was doing stuff and really running around to the doctor, to be honest with you. And I listened to two tapes. Number five is music. Music motivates me. And so I've got certain favorite CDs in my car. Man, I just turn that thing on and I just listen to them and it just becomes motivational to me. Number six is events. Certain events. Tremendous motivational power for me. When I think back of going places and seeing things and what happened while I was there and how it motivated me to be a better person or a better Christian or whatever, okay? Now, what I'm saying is in your life, you, if I had time and I could come down and sit with you today, you would share with me, you'd say, John, there have been events in my life that have just motivated me and have changed my life forever. And I'm not going to take up your time anymore, but I could give you a half a dozen events in my life that have changed my life forever. Or there are people, or there are places that I have gone, or there's music I've listened to, or there are tapes that I've heard, or there are books that I have read. These are all motivational channels. Now, here's what I want you to see. Are you ready to take notes? Average leaders direct the people. Good leaders direct and explain to their people. Excellent leaders direct, explain, and demonstrate to their people. Now, here we are. But the great leaders direct, explain, demonstrate, and inspire their people. Vince Lombardi was exactly right when he said, coaches who can outline plays on a blackboard are a dime a dozen. The ones who succeed are those who can get inside their players and motivate them. So let's talk for just a few minutes about the leader who motivates. Because there are some characteristics about the leader who motivates others. Number one, the leader who motivates others is self-motivated. That's a fact. I have never met a motivational leader that lacked motivation personally. They're all self-motivated. The very fact that you're self-motivated gives you the credibility to motivate somebody else. Number two, the leader who motivates should motivate others with the right motives. Again, the right motives is so essential. Manipulation, I say it so much, is moving people for personal advantage. Motivation is moving people for mutual advantage. So there are some motivational questions you have to ask yourself. This is a great question. Do I only motivate people who can help me? That's a great question. Do I only motivate people when I am in a leadership assignment? Do I motivate others by using leverage or guilt? Do I unconditionally love others if they do not respond to my motivation? Just some great questions to ask. Let me just stop here for a moment to say, in the area of motivating people, because all my life I've tried to stretch people. There has to be a certain amount of integrity in your motivation, and let me explain that. I always want to motivate people out of their comfort zone, but I try never to motivate people out of their gift zone. And you really need to understand the difference between that. All you do is frustrate and hurt people when you motivate people out of the gift zone. You got to always play to where their strengths are. Now, you always are motivating them out of their comfort zone. But if a person can't sing, don't motivate them to sing. Don't do that to them. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to the people they're going to try to sing to. Does that make sense? Number three. A leader who motivates creates a motivational environment. And from the book, Coaching for Improved Work Performance, there are five reasons why people do not perform the way they should. Number one, they do not know what they are supposed to do. And beside that, put the fact that is a mission issue. In other words, nobody's ever declared what the mission is. Nobody's ever laid out the vision. They do not know what they're supposed to do. The second reason people do not perform as they should is they do not know how to do it. That's a training issue. Nobody's ever sat down and trained them how to do it. Or number three, they do not know why they should do it. That's a soul issue. Or number four, there are obstacles beyond their control. That's a leadership issue. It's what leaders do. Help remove the obstacles and clear the path for people to follow. Or number five, they do not care enough to do excellent work, and that's an attitude issue. Now, a leader understands this. So a leader creates a motivational environment of which he or she has the mission, the training, the very soul, the very leadership, the very right kind of, all that stuff becomes very prevalent in a leader's atmosphere as they lead people. Let me explain it to you this way. This is a little tough, but let me give it one shot, and then we'll talk about how to motivate others. In my leading of staff at Joy, I've had a lot of joy. I've had a lot of people leave. And when they leave, I always want them to leave and do better. I always want them to advance. If they're going to do better going to the next church or going to the next whatever position, then I get very excited for them because I want people to grow. In fact, I get more excited for them if they're going to leave me and keep growing than if they would stay with me and somehow be stagnant. But here's what I have found. Not always, but most of the time. Most staff, when they left my leadership environment, did not do as well when they left at the next place. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you exactly why. I created as a leader for them a motivational environment that they did not understand nor appreciate until they left it. I set an atmosphere for them that helped them to be winners. I gave them what I call the decided advantage as far as creating an environment where they could get two or three jumps on the person perhaps that they were going to be competitive with. And I created that environment for them until it helped them to be better than they probably really were. And when they left and they didn't have that motivational environment to live in and to work in, they found it wasn't near as easy as they thought it was going to be. Okay. How do we motivate other people? Number one, appreciate the power of motivation. Appreciate the power of motivation. Let me ask you a question. This will demonstrate it as quick as I can. How many of you know how to lose weight? Would you raise your hand in this room if you know how to lose weight? Okay, we all do. It's unanimous. It's 100%. Now, we all know how to lose weight. Now, the very question is, why don't we lose weight? We don't lose weight because of a lack of knowledge. We don't lose weight because we're not motivated to lose weight. It's a motivational issue. Now, let me tell you something. Most people do not accomplish what they can accomplish, not because of a lack of knowledge or information or opportunity. They don't accomplish what they really need to accomplish because they lack the motivation within their life to do it. The moment that you motivate them, all of a sudden, they can go to a whole new level. In other words, what I'm saying to you in your business, you've got people that can go to a whole new level, but they lack motivation. They already have information. They already understand how it works, but they've never been motivated to do so. Now, I understand that well, and I want you to understand that in areas of my life, there are certain things I can almost guarantee you with great certainty that I would not have started eating right if I wouldn't have had the heart attack. I don't mean that wrong. That was a very negative motivation for me, but it was a wake-up call. Hello, John. You are still alive. Okay, let me tell you the game plan. Now, if I wouldn't have had that kind of a drastic kind of a situation happen to me, I probably still would not eat correctly. Now, that doesn't speak well of me, but it does speak truth to life. Now, what I mean is that when you get motivated, whether it's in a positive or negative way, you'll accomplish and do some things that you wouldn't have done without. It's the old story. You've heard it about the guy walking through a graveyard and didn't know that there was a freshly open grave, and he fell in and he got in there and he, you know, it's night and he couldn't get out, and finally he just kind of resigned himself to the fact that he's going to have to stay in that grave all night until somebody came by in the daytime to help him out. So he got over in the corner of the grave and kind of was falling asleep, really just saying, this is where I'm going to be all night. Another guy was walking through the graveyard. He didn't see the open grave either, and he fell in. And he did like the first guy, tries to get out, you know, he can't get out. And all of a sudden he hears this voice in this grave says, don't try, it won't help. And he got right out. Now, when did he get out? He got out when he got properly motivated. So in your notes, here's what I said. Motivation helps people to know what they should do and do it. Motivation helps people to know what commitment they should make and to make it. Motivation helps people to know what habit they should break and to break it. Motivation helps people to know what path they should take and to take it. In other words, motivation makes it possible to accomplish what you should accomplish. So appreciate the power of motivation. You will never motivate others until you appreciate the power of motivation within your own life. Number two. Believe in your people. If you really want to motivate others, you've got to believe in them. And that quote that I love so well, it's wonderful when the people believe in the leader, but it's even more wonderful when the leaders believe in the people. And the belief has to be threefold as a leader to motivate people. Believe in your vision. That gives you inspiration. When you believe in the vision, all of a sudden you're inspired to do things that you would not normally be inspired to do. believe in your cause, that gives you conviction. Boy, you show somebody that's got a cause, I'll show you somebody that's got deep convictions about what they're doing and what they're trying to accomplish. Thirdly, believe in your people, and that gives you motivation. In other words, put tens on their heads. I've talked to you about it before. Don't need to spend a lot of time here, except just believe in your people. Many people go farther than they think they could go because someone thought that they could go farther than they could go. Number three, understand the relationship between motivation and relationships. There's a tremendous bridge when we motivate people that we like. The law of connection in my 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership book says leaders touch a heart before they ask for a hand. Now, what I'm saying to you in this is the fact that your ability to motivate people will be determined by how close you are to those people. I remember in my first year of pastoring, I had a college friend of mine who we went to college together, graduated together, who took a church about 25 miles from my church. Mine was in Hillham, Indiana. His was in Shoals, Indiana. And I could remember Mike had been there for probably about a year, and he asked me to come over and do a weekend revival meetings for him. And so I came over, and I very quickly, we were having dinner together, the two couples of us, we were having dinner together, and I was going to speak for him that night. And I very quickly realized that Mike in his year there had developed a bad attitude towards people. And he said, "Boy, John, I'm glad you're here, because," he said, I think maybe you can straighten my people out." Now, when anybody tells me I need to straighten their people out, I say, okay, what, you know, there's something more than straighten your people out. There's something behind that statement. And he began to talk to me about how they weren't following him as a leader. And he was so glad that I could speak, because he knew that I would tell him to follow him as a leader. And then a phrase kept coming up. He kept talking about those ding-a-lings. He'd say, "Well, you know, that ding-a-ling doesn't do this, and that ding-a-ling doesn't do that." And for the next 15 minutes, he kind of ding-a-linged everybody in the church. Ding-a-ling here, a ding-a-ling there, a ding-a-ling there, a ding-a-ling everywhere, a ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling. Now, while he's talking to me, all of a sudden, I can't eat my food. I'm getting upset, and I can tell this isn't good. And finally, I put my fork down. I said, "Mike," I said, "do you know why you have so many ding-a-lings in your church?" And he said, "No, but I'd like to know what the problem is." I said, "Mike, it's because you're the biggest ding-a-ling of all." Now, as soon as I said that, boy, I just felt like eating, and I started eating. And poor old Mike, he didn't eat any more that night. And sure enough, I told Margaret after that weekend, I said, "He won't be here long. He won't be here. Doesn't believe in his people. Doesn't believe in his people." See, if you don't think that your people are the greatest people in the world, you shouldn't be leading them. And sure enough, maybe another year, by the end of the next year, he called me on the phone one day and said, "Well, I'm leaving, and I'm going to go to another church." He said, "I'm going to go to a good church this time. I got good people. Boy, I'm so glad to be going here." And I hung up, and I said, "Well, Mark," I said, "it won't take him long, dude. He'll find some ding-a-lings at church number two." And sure enough, he found some ding-a-lings there. And a few years later, I lived in Ohio, and he happened to live not too far from me again. And I remember the day he came into the district board and told me he was going to not only leave the ding-a-ling church, but he's going to leave the ding-a-ling denomination and all these ding-a-lings here again. And off he went. The last time I heard of him, he literally had a church somewhere in West Virginia and a chicken coop. And not much. Now what's Mike's problem? I'll tell you what his problem is. Doesn't believe in his people. And doesn't have a relationship with them that will allow him to motivate. Can I tell you something? You can't motivate people positively that you feel negatively about. So don't try it. Just don't try it. If you feel bad about someone, you can't do good with that person. So good leadership, for your notes, good leadership from a distance will impress people, but good leadership close up will impact people. And your goal and my goal is always to impact people, to have that kind of a relationship with them. On the 21 Laws of Leadership, let me tell you a project I'm doing right now that'll kind of fit in here, and I'll just take a minute to do it, and then I'll move on. In doing the 21 Laws of Leadership, because I want to teach this around the world, mainly to help pastors understand leadership, and because pastors around the world have a biblical background, what I've done is I've taken the 21 Laws of Leadership, and now I've associated those laws of leadership with biblical characters. And it's going to have a huge impact. It'll be another book, but it's going to not only be another book, it's going to have, because what will happen is, as I do this Asian tour in a few months, what will happen is I'll talk to people who know the Bible, and I'll teach the laws, and I'll use the biblical characters to know so that I can cement the principle real quick in their minds. And so what I've done in that whole situation is I've assigned different, for example, the law of timing goes to Esther. And I do a whole lecture on the 21 laws through biblical characters. Now watch this one. The law of the lid is David. And this is huge. Now, I compare Saul and David, because Saul had a lid on his life that did not allow him to be the leader that he could be. And David, of course, he lifted his lid and he became a great leader in the country. And there's a whole bunch of stuff to say about that. In fact, the people of Israel understood that there was a lid on their leadership, because the people of Israel, when they sang songs, said, Saul has slain 1,000, but David has slain his tens of thousands. Even the people know what kind of leader you are. So, I mean, there's huge stuff. But here's the point I wanted to make. I'm talking about motivation and I'm talking about relationships here for just a second. Here it is. Watch this. In David's life, he had people try to put lids on his leadership. Think about it. His father did. When Samuel came to anoint a king, Dad didn't even bring him out of the field. He said, "Well, you know, I got some good-looking sons." David wasn't even the choice. So his dad didn't believe in him. His brothers didn't believe in him. They put a lid on him, because when he came down to the army of Israel, when Goliath was intimidating him, they said, "What are you doing here? Go home." Saul, what did Saul do? Finally, when Saul realized he was going to take Goliath, what did he tried to put his armor on him. In other words, he said, "You can't do it on your own. Here, let me give you my armor." You know, David staggered around because, you know, David was a small kid and Saul was 6'4". So, I mean, he couldn't even walk in his armor. By the way, somebody asked me the other day, said, "Why did Saul give David his armor?" I said, "It's very simple. Saul wasn't using it." Everybody around David, except one person, tried to put a lid on him. And that person was Jonathan. Jonathan was a lid lifter. Jonathan came alongside of David and said, "I'll lift the lid for you." And this was huge what Jonathan did in David's life. Now, what I love about this is that when you read the story of David, at a very difficult time when David was being pursued by Saul and when his life was in jeopardy, and David became very discouraged, it said that Jonathan came alongside David and encouraged him in the Lord. Okay? In other words, he gave him the gift of encouragement. Now watch this. 4 chapters later, as you continue reading the stories, David got discouraged again, but Jonathan wasn't around. And there it says, David encouraged himself. I would contend with you, the only way that you can ever encourage yourself and motivate yourself is to have previously had somebody before encourage you and motivate you. Jonathan planted the seed of self-motivation in the life of David. Never, ever disconnect motivation and relationships. Number 4, if you really want to motivate people, walk the talk. The number one motivational principle in life is that people do what people see. How do we learn? 89% visual, 10% audio, 1% through the other senses. So walk your talk. And when I talk to leaders about credibility and walking the talk, what I say to them is this: if you have credibility and integrity with people, the longer you stay, the better it gets. If you lack credibility and integrity, the longer you stay, the worse it becomes. So walk your talk. Number 5. Show people that they are important. Dale Carnegie, of course, who's written the Bible on relationships, said, if you want to persuade someone to your point of view, make him feel like somebody. Put yourself in his shoes. Don't talk. Listen to his problems and concerns and show that you are genuinely interested. So let me give you just a few ways to show people they're important. You know them well, so I'm just going to give them to you and move on. Letter A, remember their names. Letter B, write down their quotes. The other day I was having dinner with a pretty key player in the state of Georgia. And we were just having, it was a get acquainted dinner. I never had met him before. And we were just having a good time. And he made a great statement. And I stopped him and said, oh, that's a great statement. I said, let me write it down. I got my notebook and I wrote it down. And I said, I want to use that in the failure book. Can I use it in your failure book? I wrote that thing down. And he said, oh, you not only can use that. Let me give you some more stuff on failure. And off he went. Now, here's a guy that's a multimillionaire who's had almost the highest office in this entire state, who is now, can hardly wait, says, I'll send you a video. When can we get together again? All because I said, man, that is a great quote. Can I write that down and can I use it? It's like asking people for directions, isn't it, huh? Why do people stop traffic when you ask them for directions? They know something that you don't know, and it gives them a feeling of importance. Letter C, tell others about their success. If you really want to make people feel important, tell others about their success. In other words, bring them in the picture and say, let me tell you what I appreciate about this person. And letter D, ask for their help. Ask for their help. That's how you help people feel important. Okay, we're talking about ways to motivate other people. Number one, I said appreciate the power of motivation. Two, believe in your people. Three, understand the relationship between motivation and relationships. Four, walk your talk. Number five, show people that they are important. Number six, give a person a reputation to uphold. Now, this has got some good stuff in it, so fasten your seatbelts. What you do is you ask yourself, what is special, unique, and wonderful about that person? And then you begin to share it with others. Let me explain the value of giving a person a reputation to uphold. When our daughter Elizabeth was little, I began to say, Elizabeth, you have to understand, you're the apple of my eye. That's who you are. You're the apple of my eye. All the time she grew up, you know, call her Elizabeth, call her Sissy, but I'd say, Elizabeth, you're the apple of my eye. When she got 16 and she got her first car, right on that license plate, apple of my eye. And all her life she's done it. And every once she called me just yesterday, called me on the phone, and she said, Daddy, she said, this is the apple of your eye. Hi, Sissy. How you doing, babe? When Joel Porter came along, I've always told Joel, Joel, you're my number one son. You're the last one, too. If Joel would have been the first child, he'd have been the only child. When Elizabeth started off, we said, we'll have 12. When Joel came along, we said, two's too many. And I've always said, Joel, you're my number one son. I unconditionally love you. For my nieces, I call Rachel my angel. I said, you're my angel. Jennifer, you're my sweet pea. I never will forget when Seth was born in that family, Rachel and Jennifer bringing him to me. And the first question they asked me, just a baby, like 3 days old or something. The first question they asked me, they said, Uncle John, what's his nickname going to be? Now, what I'm talking about is, if you'll hang in here with me, I'm going to really help you on motivating people. What you do is you give people, by what you say about them, a reputation to uphold. For example, Linda Eggers, my assistant. If I've told her this once, I've told her this 1,000 times. If I've told people this once, I've told it to them 10,000 times. I said, let me tell you, there's a lot of good things I say about Linda, but let me tell you something. Linda always represents me very well. So every time she interacts with people, you know what's foremost in her mind? I've got to represent John very well. I've got a guy in my Enjoy group that's a young, aggressive, unbelievable entrepreneur that has all kinds of potential, named Kevin Small. And with Kevin, you know what I have to say about Kevin? I get Kevin, I said, let me tell you, and I bring Kevin over, and I'll be with executives. I was at the Thomas Nelson group the other day, and Kevin's in the room, and I said, let me tell you guys something. Kevin Small always gets the job done. Now, Kevin goes around with a reputation. If you really want to get the job done, you give it to Kevin Small. Dave Sutherland, who's the CEO of the Enjoy Group, is the best strategic thinker I've ever run into, regardless of anybody I've ever run into. He's the smartest strategic thinker I know, period. And when I talk about Dave Sutherland, I'll say, he is the greatest strategic thinker. I'm hearing guys now talk about, you know what's so great about Sutherland? He's a strategic thinker. I've given him a reputation to uphold. Doug Carter, who represents Equip, my nonprofit organization. When I talk about Doug Carter, I say, you know what? Doug never misses an opportunity to tell somebody about Equip. Never misses an opportunity. He's great. We were having a dinner the other day, and we had some major executives of a company, and they'd flown in just to spend a lunch with us. And I brought Doug Carter with me, and we had a great conversation. And about an hour and a half into the lunch, the president of this company said, excuse me, I've got to go to the restroom. And he slipped up, and it was so funny. So the rest of us were talking. As soon as he got up, Doug Carter got up. And they're going to the restroom, and I'm inside just cracking up. I know what they're doing. Doug Carter hasn't had an opportunity to tell him about Equip. So they'll have a meeting in the restroom. And I know, sure enough, hey, they come out a few minutes later. He's got his arm around Doug. He said, man, he said, he's just telling me about Equip and all this wonderful, and how can I sign up and what can I do? Now, you know what I do? I tell that story everywhere. And every time I tell that story, you know what Doug Carter thinks? I got to find someone else to tell the story about Equip. You know what Linda Eggers thinks? I got to represent John well. You know what Dave Sutherland thinks? I got to keep that strategic mind always sharp. You see, what you do is you give people positive labels of what they do well, playing on their strength, and you give them a reputation to uphold. It works. Trust me, it works. Number seven. Number seven, what gets rewarded? Gets done. You already know it. What gets rewarded gets done. If you want to motivate people, start rewarding that way. Oh, by the way, great story. Just heard the other day. Salesman having dinner, and it's really bad outside, sleeting and snowing. And so the waiter comes over, and so he asked the waiter, he said, do you think the roads will be cleared by tomorrow morning? And the waiter says, well, it depends whether you're on salary or commission. If you're on salary, roads will be bad tomorrow morning. If you're on commission, you'll be pretty good. You'll be able to get out there. Trust me. Why? Because it's a principle that works. What gets rewarded gets done. So remember in your notes the 4-to-1 rule. The 4-to-1 rule basically says studies show that you can get top performance by giving 4 positive reinforcers or more for every punishing consequence. Anything less creates a performance problem. And if you can't remember the 4-to-1 rule, remember Grandma's Law. This law says if you eat your vegetables, you can have dessert. Watch how people spend time when they have a choice and see which desserts they pick up as reinforcers. Reward the right way. How do you reward the right way? Number one, reward people according to their interest, not yours. I wish I had time in this lesson. I don't. But I wish I had time to talk about what I consider to be a fundamental motivational error. And that is that everyone is like me or will be when they grow up. I'm going to do a whole lesson on that sometime. Because if you believe that, you will only reward people according to what you think is important, not what they think is important. Number two, reward people only if they deserve it. And number three, reward people immediately. The longer the delay, the less the value. Good stuff there. Number eight, I'm just telling you ways to motivate people. You can read, if I skip something, you can read it on your own. Number eight, hold more celebrations. In other words, have more parties. Ken Blanchard said people do better when they feel better about themselves. And I just want to encourage you that you just have celebrations. When I'm on the road and speaking, every night when we have dinner after a long day of everybody working hard, we always go to a great restaurant and we just sit and get a room all by ourselves and allow nobody else in except us. And what we do is we tell stories of how much fun we had. Well, we just rehearse the day, talk about the good things that happened. Somebody will say, well, let me tell you about this person that came back and they told me this. And we just rehearse and enjoy food together. And those meetings last for 3 hours usually. But that's what I'm talking about, that kind of celebrating reward. Quarterly at Enjoy, the Enjoy Group. Quarterly, we have quarterly meetings. And I'm telling you this, but we just had one last week. And I'm telling you, these meetings are just filled with energy. They last usually 2 hours. And we talk about the good things that are happening. We talk about what we're learning, how we're growing. We give away 3 awards. We give a leadership award for the person that really has exhibited leadership. We give a teamwork award. That's the person that's helped somebody on the inside. We give a partnership award. That's somebody that's helped gone the extra mile and helping somebody on the outside. And we give those awards out and every quarter constantly. They're just celebration times. Well, I don't need to go on and on. All I'm just saying is you got to have some celebration times if you want to motivate people. Number 9, encourage participation. You motivate people when they get a piece of the ownership. You motivate people when they get a part of the action. People support what they help create. Coach Mack at Promise Keepers, of course, has been a tremendous football coach. And in, what was it, in the early 90s, he had the number one football team in the country at the University of Colorado. And Coach Mack and I were having dinner one day, and he told me, he said, John, he said, before the big game, now for them at the University of Colorado, the big game was Nebraska. He said, before the big game, he said, that week before the big game, he said, during the week, I bring in every player on my team individually into my office. And he said, I sit them down and I say, now, you know, this is the biggest game we're going to play all year. Yes, coach, I know that. Let me ask you a question, Coach Mack would say. What are you going to do personally that will assure the University of Colorado a victory this coming Saturday? Tell me what you're going to do. And coach said, you know, that offensive guard would say, you know, coach, I'm not going to miss one blocking assignment this week. I'm going to listen carefully in the huddle. I'm going to make sure I know my assignment. And Coach Mack said, he said, I'd write down what they would tell me. I'd write every one of them down. You know, Joe, who plays left tackle, is going to not miss a blocking assignment. You know, and Jack comes in and says, you know what? He said, you know, last game, coach, I missed those two passes. Now I'm going to concentrate. I'm not going to miss a pass that's thrown. Any pass that comes close to me, I'm going, okay, Jack says he's going to catch every pass that comes close to him. And Coach Mack said, when he finished with each player, he'd stand up and shake their hand, look them in the eye, and say, then I can depend upon you for that victory. Coach, you can depend upon me. He said, John, you don't have any idea the ownership that came into that big game because I spent time one-on-one with each one of those people and because I gave them a piece of the rock. I let them participate and have ownership. Edgar Daly says, people remember 20% of what they hear, 30% of what they see, 50% of what they see and hear, and 80% of what they see, hear, and do. Number 10, if you want to motivate people, set high standards. Set high standards. Now, stay with me in this because this is very important. The secret to motivating people is to hire self-motivated people. And the secret in hiring self-motivated people is to set high standards. Now, I hope you caught what I just gave you. I remember sitting down within the last year with a very good executive who had done a great job building his company. So I asked him the question. I love these meetings. I try every week to have a meeting with somebody that can teach me something. And I remember saying, you've brought such good people around you. I said, let me ask you the question. How do you keep them motivated? He said, it's very simple. He said, I only hire self-motivated people. And I looked at him and said, well, that's good. I mean, I guess that would help, wouldn't it, huh? Think about it. In your business, if they were all self-motivated, it would help your motivation. And then I looked at him. I said, well, how do you hire only self-motivated people? And he said, John, set the standards high. Because he said, let me tell you something about self-motivated people. They're not scared off by high standards. He said, the only people that you'll scare off when you set high standards are people that aren't motivated. They're going to want something for nothing. They're going to want an easy trip. They're going to say, how far do you carry me? And what are the benefits? He said, you hire somebody self-motivated, and they understand this process. Now, this is very important. The law of magnetism in my 21 irrefutable laws of leadership says that who you are is who you attract. Who you are is who you attract. Now, let me ask you a question. Are you self-motivated? The reason I ask you that question is you can't hire self-motivated people if you're not self-motivated. You can't bring people around you that are self-motivated if you're lazy yourself. So I think there are three conditions that are needed for people to stretch up to the high standards. Here they are. Number one is a challenge. I think when you really want to reach out to get those self-motivated people, you got to talk about risk, to learn, to grow, to fulfill their potential. Self-motivated people like to hear that kind of language. Number two is empowerment. So they can be autonomous, so they can be creative and make decisions and act on their own. And thirdly is significance, to do things that matter and create value. What I have found is if you throw out a challenge, empower the person, and talk about the significance of what they're doing, and they'll migrate, the winners, the leaders, the key players, the somebody, they'll migrate to those three topics. Number 11, if you want to motivate people, know the motivational moments of a person's life. Everybody has what I call motivational moments. When do people change? When are people motivated to change? Very simply, when they hurt enough, they have to. When they learn enough, they want to. And when they receive enough, that they're able to. When they hurt enough, they have to. When they learn enough, they want to. When they receive enough, they're able to. Now, let me say something to you about this. Look for those three moments in a person's life. I promise you, if you can find one, you can motivate them. Now, if you find two, you're going to have major motivation with them. If you find three, you'll change their life. Number 12. If you're going to motivate people, you got to communicate effectively. Our English word for communication comes from a Latin word, communis, which means common. Effective communicators always find something in common with the people. It is the common ground that allows us to connect with people. And the keys to finding common ground with people, one is identification, knowing what motivates people. If I'm going to motivate you, I've got to identify with you. And how I identify with you is to know what motivates you. And how I know what motivates you is by asking you three questions. They're what I call the three identification questions. What do you sing about? What do you cry about? And what do you dream about? You answer those three questions and I'll find the keys to your life. Now, in finding common ground with people, you not only need to identify with them, but secondly, you need to connect with them. Identification will help you to know what motivates people, where connection will help you know how to motivate them. And basically, I've got a lot of good written stuff there about motivation. About it, how it comes from the heart, if it's going to be lasting motivation. So what I want to do is I want to share with you two things to just will help you connect and help you understand that person. One is the words of our mouth. The Bible tells us that what we talk about is what we're motivated about. And number two, the way we spend our money. If you know what a person talks about and where they spend their money, you're going to know what motivates them. For example, you know what? I've never spent a dime on mountain climbing equipment. Never have. In fact, you know what? If you came up to me right now and said, John, you can have this mountain climbing equipment for 90% off, I'd say, well, thank you very much, but really, I'm not interested. Now, you say, well, isn't it a good deal? Can I tell you something? It's a great deal. Is it good equipment? It's the best equipment. It has nothing to do with the equipment. It has nothing to do with the fact it's a great deal. It has something very interesting. I'm not motivated to go mountain climbing. So no matter what the deal is, it doesn't matter. Now, what you and I have to understand is when we throw out motivation to people, we've got to understand, we've got to get in their arena. If we're not in their arena, no matter how good it is, no matter how good our business is, it ain't going to matter anyway. We've got to find out where they live and see if it connects. One more point on motivation. You've been so patient and you've really taken great notes, and I know some of the stuff I should spend more time on, but you're quick and smart and sharp and you are self-motivated, and you'll take everything I gave you and you'll work it over and work it over, won't you, huh? Number 13, reinforce motivation by placing value on habits. And here's why. This is very key, folks. Motivation gets you there, but habits keep you there. I wish that we would spend a lot more time on helping people form habits than we do on hyping people. Habits change your life. Hyping people changes your moment. So are you in it for the long haul or are you in it for the short haul? And I put in here a little thing that I've kept on a laminated card for a long time. I picked up in a doctor's office one day. We hear it almost every day, sigh, sigh, sigh. I can't get myself motivated to lose weight, test my blood sugar, et cetera. And we hear an equal number of sighs from diabetes educators who can't get their patients motivated to do the right thing for their diabetes and for their health. We have news for you. Motivation is not going to strike you like lightning. And motivation is not something that someone else, nurse, doctor, family member, can bestow or force upon you. The whole idea of motivation is a trap. Forget motivation. Just do it. Exercise, lose weight, test your blood sugar, or whatever. Do it without motivation, and then guess what? After you start doing the thing, that's when the motivation comes and makes it easier for you to keep on doing it. Motivation is like love and happiness. It's a byproduct. When you've actively engaged in doing something, it sneaks up and zaps you when you least expect it. As Harvard psychologist Jerome Brewer says, you're more likely to act yourself into feeling than to feel yourself into action. So act. Whatever it is that you know you should do, do it. In other words, go from hype to habits, because we overestimate the event and we underestimate the process. You have the application section there. Get motivated and go do it.